Wayne Beller, I'm an alcoholic. I'm not going to think about that too much. I want to thank Bob for inviting me to come share with you good people. He was telling me about this meeting about 100 times a week. And when he invited me, it pleased me, made me feel like he cares about me and wants me in his life. And if you're new... Of course, he's in Oceanside tonight, carrying the message. I want to thank Mike for picking me up at the airport and taking me to my room and taking me out to dinner. And we had a good time, and we talked about AA and talked about my son. Let me preface this by telling you that I really am glad to be here. I have many friends in this room. I have a lot of people just in the front two rows that I have much history with, and I don't think there's any bad blood between any of them. I think that we're all clean. And boy, for me, that's pretty interesting. I am the epitome of the tornado, and you could nickname me Hurricane if you like. And a friend of mine calls himself Hurricane. He says after 20 years he's been downgraded to a tropical storm. The reason I say that, I want to preface it by saying I'm glad to be here. My son, I'll tell you that story later. My 13-year-old son is with me in California, and I really didn't want to leave him. I wanted to stay with him and go to the amusement park with he and his new friends. But I had a commitment to be here with you folks, and it's not my job to put it upon you, the fact that I'd like to be with him. I'm just following through with my AA commitment, and something Barbara said is very, very important. Don't even know if she knows. She might not even, I think Louis approached it as well. Don't know, it was Louis. We don't, the tragedy of Alcoholics Anonymous is we don't have a step to work that will mend a broken heart. I hope you got a lot of commitments, was said to me. And I do. I have a lot of commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous. No, those commitments have gotten me through the worst, most desperate times of my sobriety. If you're new in this room, welcome to AA. It's only just begun. I love AA. Let's get on with that. By the way, I'm not trying to be down about that. I'm not down about that. I'm truly happy to be here. But if you have children and you've been estranged as I have, you'll understand that if I could be with him, that would be my choice. However, he didn't save my life. And being with him does not give me life. He brightens my life. And I need this. I'm not listening a whole lot while I'm talking, but neither are you. I know who you're thinking about. You. But I got a job to do. It'll keep me sober for an hour. And might make you thirsty, but what the hell? I mean, I love to drink. I get thirsty all the time. I love Budweiser. That's my drink of choice. I don't think there's another beer in the world that compares to it. I love Budweiser so much, when I see the Clydesdales in a parade, I weep. I want you to know I was just given a certificate when I was in St. Louis a few weeks back by August Bush III. I was given a certificate as an honorary brewmaster. Didn't get to drink it, but I made it. That don't mean nothing. I just thought I'd share that. But I got to go pep the Clydesdales. You know, I'm 22 years, 9 months, and 9 days sober today. I haven't had a drink, any pills, powders, potions, or lotions from the neck up. But I got to tell you, I got a thrill out of petting that Clydesdale, but don't go no further than that. I am not trisexual. I'll tell you how much I miss Budweiser. Mike and I was leaving the restaurant tonight, and I looked over along the curb, and there was a bottle of Bud sitting right there, and I could tell from 50 feet away it was full. And I said, Mike, wait a minute. Moment of silence. Because that's a lonely beer. I know how it feels. That's all I drank, basically, was Budweiser. But then if you read the third chapter, more about alcoholism, it talks about natural wine. I never had any of that. I drank Ripple. Boone's Farm, Strawberry Hill. You know what I like about Boone's Farm, Strawberry Hill? When I puke, it looks like I'm bleeding internally. Now I just tell you I got cancer. And you feel sorry for me and you buy me a bed. And I also like Mad Dog 2020 Grape. Now I want you to know something if you don't already know. What that will do when you combine those together out of the dumpster when you're on Skid Row. You take a quart bottle of Bud that's got a little bit left in the bottom, and then you dump some Ripple out of a bottle that's been thrown away, you dump some Strawberry Hill, you dump some Mad Dog, and you mix it up and you drink it. When you drink that stuff for a while, it's going to give you a condition known as alcohol terminal diarrhea. I had diarrhea for 6 years. When you've had diarrhea for 6 years, you've got to develop good decision-making skills. You got to have split-second timing. Well, I'm a puker, too. I got so used to puking, I could hit this front row and not even get my own food. And I've got false teeth because I stood up a lot when I should have shut up. So I'm a projectile type of a guy. I remember there was one room at home where my wife would never tread, and that was the bathroom. That was my throne of contempt. I could have a cardiac arrest, and my wife would say, "Too bad. I'm not coming in there." And I'd be bound before the old ivory altar, and all of a sudden things would start cutting loose, if you know what I mean. If you get my drift. All of a sudden I'd blow my denture out right into the stool. And I would know a moment of pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. And then it would be a race between me and the hole at the bottom, because I know if those teeth get down there before I get to them, they're gone for good. And I'd catch them just before they went down the chuter, and I'd think, well, what the hell, I'd rinse them off and put them right back in. I sure miss drinking. I know I look a little more glamorous than that, but back then, let me draw you a picture of me. I was living on Skid Row. I was eating. Well, let me just set that up for you. It was cold. It was wintertime. I'm from Illinois. It gets really cold there in the wintertime, and I found out that living on the street, as it gets cold, you got to have a place to go, and I could no longer go in Larry's Oasis at night. Larry used to let me sleep in there underneath the pinball machine. But then I would wake up and I would start shooting his whiskey bottles. I wanted to be a cowboy. And I'd wake up, I'd be John Wayne or Wyatt Earp, and I'd have quick draws and I'd shoot out the whiskey bottles because I just wanted to do that. And he got to a point where he wouldn't let me stay in there anymore. And the only place I had to go, in my opinion, was to the street. And I ended up sleeping in a dumpster to keep from getting frostbite. I found out a little fact. In case you slip and you find yourself in Illinois in the wintertime, here's a little clue. If you find yourself a dumpster that hasn't been picked up for a while, garbage gives off a strange kind of a decomposing heat. I don't understand it. All I know is if you bury yourself into it, you don't get frostbite. And that's what I did. And then if you're hungry, what the hell? It's right back. I remember it was November 1972, and I was in my dumpster. I was home. And I heard a knock on my door. I was there. So I opened the lid. I knew it wasn't the garbage man. It wasn't the right time of day. You know who looked down there at me? My daddy. And he looked down there at me and he says, "Wayne, do you want to come home?" "No. No, I don't. I like it here, Dad. Doesn't this look warm and cozy down here? If I had room, I'd invite you in. If it wasn't for you and Mom, I wouldn't be here after all." That's not what I said. That's kind of what I thought. When I said, "No thanks, Dad, I'm doing fine." And my dad didn't need Al-Anon. Closed the lid and left. Didn't even try to talk me out of it. And by the good grace of God, it got too cold to stay in that dumpster that winter. And I'm pretty romantic with 80-year-old women at midnight. And I understand how you feel, too. Just picture this for a moment. 6'3", 146 pounds. No teeth. Long hair down to my butt, caked with stuff from the dumpster. A full beard because I was ashamed of how I looked without any teeth. Carrying a gun and a K-bar. And I met this waitress at Harvey's restaurant. And that's what she saw when I stumbled into her restaurant that night. And she gave me a hot cup of water and some Heinz tomato ketchup. And I started going in there every night, making that little cup of Heinz tomato ketchup soup. And she started hiding me saltine crackers out in the garbage can so I could pick them up on the way in so she wouldn't get fired for helping a bum. And a guy by the name of Harvey owned that restaurant. Harvey was this little old ugly man, ugly, sinful. Never saw anybody look like that in my entire life. He owned that restaurant. He was in this thing called AA. I don't care. I've got problems, but I'm not an alcoholic. Now, I'm going to tell you why. I know what an alcoholic is. I saw one on TV. He was lying in a doorway in an alleyway. You could see the soles of his shoes. They had holes in them. He was wearing a tattered and torn raincoat with a rope tied about the waist, and he was drinking out of a brown paper bag. That is an alcoholic. I submit to you to this day, 22 years, 9 months, and 9 days sober, I have never drank nothing out of a brown paper bag. Therefore, not alcoholic. And you want to know the power of an idea. I still have that idea some days. And that's why I need you to share the music with me of what you were like. So I can remember, oh no, that's not it. That's only a small symptom of it. The bottle is a symbol. I didn't know that for a long time. I almost died because I didn't know that. But this little old lady, she took pity on me. She cut me a deal. She told me if I would mop and wax the dining room floors, she'd give me 2 sausage sandwiches on whole wheat toast. And I cut the deal. And I started mopping and waxing the floor. And about halfway through, I thought, boy, am I severely underpaid. She's taking advantage of me. You know how you start thinking? And I was getting resentment. And never forget it. Old Harvey came in one night. Now, Harvey was this guy that was about 5 foot nothing. Had this strange nose. It was straight and narrow, just like mine is, but then it got big. Like bombs had gone off right there. And underneath the surface of the skin were these red and purple and blackish blood veins. And when his heart beat, his nose thumped. Like, and I just mesmerized by looking at his nose. Now, I've got this perception thing. We've all heard Clancy talk about the disease of perception. If you haven't, stay alive and sober, you will. But we all have our own spin on it. Harvey told me something, and I'm glad I didn't hear what he said, because I would not be here today. I'll tell you about that. Here's how I hear. I've got this perception thing. Detached from what I've been saying for a minute, I was sober about 3 seconds, and my sponsor took me to a meeting in Chicago, Illinois, at a group called the Mustard Seed Group. Now, the reason he took me to the Mustard Seed in Chicago was because the police were looking for me in Moline. And he wanted to give me time to get sober before he turned me in under the guise of going to a meeting. So I've been around AA drinking for 5 years. So I know about AA. I know how it works. My sponsor's in the front row with a bunch of his old cronies. They got me and the other losers in the second row. At least that was my opinion. Figured he'd put us back in the second row so he didn't have to look at the disease. There was about 300 people in that room. It was narrow, like this width here. 300 people straight back, and a guy up here speaking, just like I am, you know, lying, just like some of you think I am right now. At least that was my opinion. I was sitting there critiquing the speaker because I find it absolutely necessary, just like I saw some of you critiquing me already. Don't worry, I got you long before you got me. So this guy's up here speaking, and my sponsor's Barty is sitting right about where Tim is, and I was sitting right behind him where you are, and this speaker's up here speaking, and I got my best friend Jimmy. I've known him 3 seconds. He's sitting next to me. And I'm critiquing the speaker as he talks. And he starts talking, and I can't stand it. And by the way, I was louder that night than I am right now. Everybody in the room heard me. I was sure of that. And as the guy was speaking, I nudged Jimmy, and I said, "Oh, Jimmy, he's a liar. He couldn't have drank like that. His guts would fall out. He's talking New York. Let him come out here and talk to us." My sponsor started doing that sponsor twitch in the chair. You got a sponsor, you've seen it. And he started talking again, and all of a sudden he said something, and I said, "Oh, Jimmy, he's such a liar. If he'd have done that, he'd be locked up on a psych ward for the rest of his life. I know. I've been there 17 times. And I have. I've been psychiatrically institutionalized 17 times. And I have to tell you, I liked it every single time I was there. I miss it sometimes today. Now I'm going to tell you why, in case you slip. It gets lonely up there. You know, you give the way I drank and the way I acted, I couldn't get a date to save my life. But you put me in a psych ward and I got a 50-50 shot. Now I'm going to tell you how to do it. The psych wards I went on, they bring the med cart right out onto the floor and you line up. And they got little paper cups that they put your pills in. Well, I know what Thorazine is. I've had enough Thorazine pumped into me to slow me down until I'm 210. Anybody else here been on Thorazine? Come on, tell the truth. Thank you, I'm not alone. Now, I'm dying if I'm lying. Thorazine is an interesting chemical. It did not do one single solitary thing to slow down the speed of my thinking, but my butt will never catch it. Well, I know if it does it to me, it does it to you girls, too. So there'd be 9 or 10 women lined up getting their pills, and I'd wait to see which one was taking Thorazine. And I'd time it, because I knew in about an hour I had a shot at a date. I knew at least you couldn't outrun me. So I said, "Jimmy, he's a liar. He'd been locked up in a psych ward for the rest of his life." And then he said something. I said, "Oh, Jimmy, he's such a liar. He couldn't have done that. He'd be locked up in prison. I know." And I guess my sponsor got sick and tired of hearing me go on in front of everybody, disrupting the meeting. He turned around and looked me right in the eye, and here's what I heard him say. "Shut up, you goddamn loser. You ain't got a thing to say we want to hear. And if we ever think you do, we'll come out that abandoned car we pulled you out of behind Harvey's restaurant. We'll toot your little horn and invite you in to share. Now sit there, keep your big fat mouth shut, or leave." That's what I heard him say. Here's what he really said. By the way, any of you newcomers laughing right there, raise your hand. Come on. Come on, you newcomers that were laughing, raise your hand. Welcome to AA. Nobody out there thinks that's a damn bit funny. So Harvey gave me this brass coin he had in his pocket. And on one side it had these two A's, and on this other side it had this stupid prayer, "God grant me something." It didn't say nothing about money, food, or shelter, so I really didn't care. Now, what Harvey said, in fact, was this. He gave me a coin. He says, "You take this to 416 16th Street tomorrow. You tell them Harvey sent you. They're friends of mine. They're going to help you." That's really what he said, but that is not what I heard. What I heard was, "They will give you some free food to eat. They will give you some pocket dough, because we know you're broke. And 3 or 4 packs of Pall Mall tailor-made cigarettes." Had I not heard that, I would have never went. Because I may be a lot of things, but I ain't no alcoholic. That was my opinion. And then he told me when I got there, there'd be a light bulb. See, it was in the basement. And he said there'd be a light bulb hanging on a cord. He said, "If that light was on, go in. They're expecting you." So I went down there and found it. And on the side of the building was this giant sign posted by the city of Moline, which read, "Building condemned. Do not enter." I thought, Right beneath it was another sign with an arrow pointing right into the basement. It said, AA, 16th Street, welcome. Does that mean I can't go upstairs because it's condemned, but the basement's okay? It requires thinking. And then I looked for the light bulb and I found it. It was hanging on a cord, just like he said it would be, but it wasn't on. It was flickering. It was flickering on and off. And I didn't know what that meant. Now, I don't know if you think like I do, but I wondered what that meant. Could have been Morse code for all I know, but it wouldn't stay on. And it made me so insane that I left. Some free food, smoke, some money waiting for me. So I went over there. By that time, it was nightfall. I remember charging through the basement doorway, failing to notice that the door header was 5'10". I'm 6'3". And I caught that door header right across my eyebrow. And the impact literally knocked me off my feet, and I slid into my first meet with Alcoholics Anonymous. About 6 feet inside the door is this round table with six or seven old men. In my opinion, they were talking about death and dying because it wasn't going to be long. And I slid right between two of them. And this old crusty one gets out of his chair and goes just like this. And then he says, "Slide right in here, dummy. We got a wrench to fit every nut that comes in the door." I didn't like him right away. So I started reaching for that 357 I had tucked away in my boot. Next thing out of his mouth was, "Dummy." So I heard. I said, "My name's Wayne." He says, "I got it. Dummy, I'm going to be your sponsor." And that saved his life. Now, you might wonder why, since I've never been to AA and I'm really not an alcoholic anyway, why that saved his life. I played baseball. I bowled in league. Sponsors pay for everything. And that was the thought that went through my mind. It's about time. Because the VA was tired of me. I got up off that floor and stuck my head right up poor old Barney's butt. I truly did. He couldn't get rid of me for nothing. They said Barney should have put turf signals on his hips to keep him breaking my neck that he turned left or right too sudden. I mean, wherever he was, I was. And I drank the whole time. You know, I went to that first meeting, and I found it absolutely necessary to drink again. By the way, I'm a slipper. If you're in this room and you're a slipper, welcome to AA, and please don't be ashamed. Don't let anybody else make you ashamed. It's suffering enough, the fact that we just have a hard time getting sober. But let yourself know that I'm a slipper. I just haven't had a slip for 22 years, 9 months, and 9 days today. That's all. And by the good grace of God, I came around here for 5 years drinking. And I went everywhere Barney went. By the way, if you ever find a gathering like this where a drinking drunk is not allowed to sit in and listen, in my opinion, it's no longer AA. Is a gathering of people forgot where they came from. However, if you're new and you're drinking, I do want to caution you. We want you to sit and behave while you're here. And therein lies my problem. See, I can either sit or I can behave. I just can't do it simultaneously. I was about 4 years, I guess, going to meetings, drinking, and I had learned that now follow this. You helping me helps you. Got it? So I'm down at Larry's Oasis drinking. I remember there was an 8 o'clock meeting, and I was feeling bad about myself, so I thought I would go to a meeting and let you help me. So you could feel good about yourself. Are you tracking with that line of thinking? But I got to the meeting late. Disrupted the speaker. Walked right in at 8:15. But I was spiritual because I was going to let you help me. Some guy gets up out of his chair and gets up in my face and he says, "You got to quiet down. You're disrupting the meeting." And I looked at him and something came over me and I said, "You know what? I don't want to." Another old boy gets up out of his chair and says, "You got to sit down. You're disrupting the meeting." I looked at him and I said, "I don't have to." Another one gets up and says, you got to leave. You're welcome to come back tomorrow. We don't kick anybody, no matter how sick and sorry they may be, out of AA. Everybody has a right to find sobriety. However, we have a right to an undisturbed, undistracted message for us and the newcomer. You have to leave. And I said to him, you can't make me. Oh, yes, they can. You see that baby Brahma bull over there in the white shirt and the black hat? About four guys his size, each one grabbed an arm and a leg. Talked some newcomer into holding the door open. I noticed as I flew by. As I landed out in the middle of 16th Street, I heard one of the old-timers yell out, keep coming back! That was the unconditional love about that. 4.5 years drinking, I came into a meeting, and I heard my sponsor yell out, hey, dummy! That's what I heard. I turned around and I said, what? He said, you know this program tends to work better if you don't drink? I didn't know that. I've been coming here for 4.5 years drinking, and I never heard that one time, in my opinion. I heard it that time. And if you're an alcoholic of my type, you'll understand this behavior. Something fragmented in my mind when I heard that. I knew it was a direct threat to my safety. And I reached down into my cowboy boot. I pulled that .357 out. I wheeled around. I fired a round off at my sponsor's face, and I missed him 6 inches high. They say if Barney would have been 6 foot tall, he'd be 6'100". I came to the next morning at Franciscan Mental Health Center in Rock Island, Illinois. It was my 17th trip to the psych ward. I was strapped down in six-point leather restraints to a steel bed in the center of a padded room, black and blue from head to toe from a little AA group therapy. Good therapy. Never did that again. I had a visitor that morning. You know who it was? My sponsor. I could not get rid of him for nothing. He was like a maggot on a mission. I couldn't. You know what? I'm laying there naked, tore up from the floor up, so to speak. Tied down. I can't get up. And he's walking around snickering at me. He says, dummy? Well, I heard. He says, there's something wrong with you. He says, I don't even know if you're an alcoholic. You might just be nuts. And I'm thinking, you know, they got to let me out of here someday, and I know where you live. And it's like he had ESPN. The very next thing he said was, if they let you out of here, and they're talking about keeping you a while and studying you. You read that cold, chilling vapor? Then he said the thing that baffles me today. He says, but if they let you out of here, and if you come with us and do what we did and still do, you can recover too. Do you know he never said a thing about what I did the night before? I was expecting him to tell me I could never go to AA ever again. I was expecting him to tell me what a low life, miserable, unthinking, I could go on and on and on. None of that stuff. And by God, he went to the Board of Psychiatry and got me released into his custody. Can you believe that? I hated that man. I could not outrun him. And amazingly enough, I asked him one day, I said, Barney, weren't you afraid of me? He says, no, I'm not afraid of you. It's in the book. You heard that, haven't you? It's in the book. The book. Anybody want to shoot their big book? I got so sick of hearing people talk about the book. He said, it's in the book. I said, what's in the book? That's in the book. What's that? Finally, one day he showed me. He said, we do not need to fear to go to the most sordid spot on earth to carry this message, for God will keep us unharmed. And bucko, you are the most sordid spot I've ever been. But Barney, I'm a child of God. Not yet. It's in the book. An alcoholic in his cups is an unlovely creature. He loved pointing that crap out to me. so he could hurt my feelings. And November 8, 1977, I didn't know I was going to take what appears to be my last drink. I was at the Rock Island Rescue Mission, Rock Island, Illinois. It's centered near 20th Street and 4th Avenue. It was a very cold November morning. 1977 was one of the worst winters we had in Illinois that I can remember. And I was being kicked out of the Rock Island Rescue Mission for rifling pillowcases. I failed to notice there were heads attached. Then I got kicked out. And when I get kicked out into the morning, I want to go to a meeting. Know what I mean? I was sincere. I want to get sober when I've got nowhere else to go. And so I started that 65-block walk, though I didn't know that, from the Rock Island Rescue Mission to the Moline Group for the noon meeting. So I stopped and stole a six-pack of Bud on the way. Hot. It was cold by the time I got there. And when I got there, I truly sat on the front steps of the Moline Group and started drinking my beer waiting for the noon meeting. I got three cans drank, and guess who showed up early for the meeting? You understand, don't you? Barney. So I got three empty cans of Bud on the ground, three more in my lap, and here comes my sponsor. He could have at least waited three more cans. And like a good old-timer that he was and is, he looked me straight in the eye. Didn't look at the beer at all because he knew it wouldn't do him any good. He's an alcoholic. He knows what I'm going through. He doesn't even notice the beer, I think. He looks me in the eye and he says, "Dummy," at least that's what I heard. He says, "Why don't you come in and help me set up for the meeting?" I said, "Okay, I'll be in a minute. Anything to be of service." You know, he didn't even blink an eye. Went right in. He probably knew I was going to drink those other three cans of beer, but something happened to me. I hid him in the bush right after the meeting, and then I went in and I helped my sponsor set up for the meeting, and then something dramatic happened that it took a long time for me to come to understand throughout my sobriety happened. About 11:45, now bear in mind, I'm not a newcomer in my mind. I've been around AA 5 years, and I only had three cans of beer that day. A newcomer walked in. He was drunk, and I found out he'd never been to AA before. So I raced up to him and told him I'd sponsor him. You know, that missed me for a long time. And my sponsor intervened, saved the guy's life. And then he talked to him, and I thought I was sponsoring. And then after the meeting, my sponsor took me and the newcomer out for lunch. And he and I have neither one drank from that day to this day. And I still sponsor him, in my opinion. My sponsor said, "You got to grab a newcomer. Watch what you tell a newcomer." I took that literal. So I'm in my home group. I'm 2 weeks sober. And I'm looking for a newcomer. I don't know what one looks like for sure. He said I'd know when I saw it. So in walked this guy into the back door of the Moline Group, and I saw these deer in the headlights look in his eyes. So I knew he had to be new. So I started out to shake his hand like I saw you do, but then I remembered Barney's voice saying, "Grab a newcomer!" So I went from here to his throat, and I literally grabbed him by his throat and pinned him up against the wall. 2 weeks sober. I said, "Listen, asshole! If you want what I got, you got to do what I did." This is what I heard. "You ain't got a damn thing I want." So I let him go. Told him I'll be here when he gets back. Then I run crying to my sponsor, "Barney, he don't want what I got." He says, "Really? We can only hope you don't want what you got. Keep working at it. You're bound to find one in such a delusion, he'll never know it's you." And you know, I've been doing that for 22 years, 9 months, and 9 days. I get them unsuspecting psychotic types who only see themselves. 3 weeks sober, I've got this long hair and this full beard. I'm unkempt. I've got no teeth. I'm absolutely ashamed of myself, but my home group is letting me participate. And my sponsor wants me to take me to this thing called AA convention. And bear in mind, I still don't know what's wrong with me.
Oh, yeah, I'm saying I'm an alcoholic, but I don't know what that means. I'm just mimicking what everybody else in the room is doing. Thank God I did. Thank God I had a sponsor. I would have never asked him to sponsor me. We were nothing alike. So he picked me. You know why he got me? When Barney sponsored me 5 years prior to my getting sober, he was 57 years old and had 5 years sobriety. And the reason he sponsored me was because he was a newcomer. And none of the rest of them wanted me. That could have hurt my feelings if I'd have found out sooner. So I want to tell you a story here. We're coming up on Thanksgiving shortly. It's on my mind. Talked about it last week when I was in Ohio. It was near Thanksgiving 1977, and my sponsor says, I'm taking you to an AA convention. I said, what's that? He says, you'll see when you get there. Now, I thought he told me I stunk, but basically what he said was I needed to clean up. He said, I couldn't go meet these fine people of AA. He said, there's going to be about 1,200 people at this convention. Now, my home group was 15 people, 14 men and Toothless Sally. Boy, when we kissed, there was vacuum. Boy, there's a vision for you, I'll tell you. So Barney took me to his trailer. And he cleaned me up, and I shaved my face because my sponsor said I no longer need to be ashamed. That I can walk tall, if I can walk. And then he took me to his favorite department store. He took me to the Salvation Army to buy me some go-to-convention clothes. This is 1977. He took me to the suit rack. The only suit they had was this lime green double-knit polyester. Had yellow lining with green tennis rackets. So we bought it. And then we went to the shirt department and I said, Barney, I'm picking out the shirt. So I didn't know what a disco shirt was. I missed all that. All I know is I found this shirt that looked like silk. I found out it was brushed polyester. And it only had one button from here to here. I was pretty proud of my bony chest. All 146 pounds of me. So we bought that shirt and went over to the shoe department where the only 13 and a half inch gunboats they had in supply. Any of you people, any disco people here? Remember the disco? Remember those black and brown box toe Oxford disco shoes with a 2.5 inch platform sole and a 4 inch heel? That's all they had. So we bought them. We got out of there for $1.85. He took me to the convention, stood me at the front door, and made me a greeter. Now, I want you to know who the alcoholics were who were getting. Now, listen to this. They were willing to give up their Thanksgiving weekend to come to Rock Island, Illinois, to do what I'm doing tonight in my best way, to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. These are people who got made fun of. They got called circuit speakers. They got accused of making money. They got accused of things, and they were willing to do it because they loved AA. I had no concept of that sitting there with 3 weeks of sobriety. A guy by the name of Chuck C. Had his wife also with him. A guy by the name of Norm Elfie. Gal by the name of Dottie Shore, Clancy I, Johnny H, and a guy named Tom Brady from Charlotte, North Carolina. Those were the speakers. Those were the men and women who were willing to give up their family weekend to come, in my opinion, to talk to me. I'm standing there greeting people, right? Any of you heard Chuck C. laugh before he passed or on a tape? He comes walking to my sponsor, nothing out of the ordinary. He can't even get to my hand before he starts cracking up. He's Johnny bent me over and frisked me for a weapon. I mean, that's what he said. I knew he was from California. Norm said something to me, but I couldn't pick it up. It was so quick. But they all did one thing in common. They all laughed. And I couldn't take it no more. I turned around at Barney after Tom passed laughing. And I said, Barney, are they laughing at me? He looked me right in the eye and he says, yep. Yeah, they are. He says, you're a sight to behold. He says, but you know what? If you ever learn to laugh at yourself, you'll never be left unamused. Think about that in the morning. And then an interesting thing happened. My daddy, who'd been sober 4 years, called me and invited me for Thanksgiving dinner. And my family had a restraining order against me. I wasn't allowed to go near any of my family because one night I drank a bottle of tequila and tried to kill my entire family. And they had a restraining order against me. And my dad called me and said he heard I was sober and invited me to Thanksgiving dinner. And I said, sure. I couldn't believe it. I called Barney. Barney said, go. Sit there and eat. Don't talk. You'll be fine. Barney's family was in town for Thanksgiving. And I knew he was having dinner at the same time I was going to have dinner with my family. And I knew my dad. I'd heard rumors. My dad hadn't drank for 4 years. And my dad was so excited about our reunion that he went out and got a 12-pack of Miller Lite. Miller Lite was brand new. You know that? My dad had never had one. And he asked me if I wanted one. That's my father. Do you know what that must have been like? Of course you do. I said, absolutely. My dad opened his up, and then he opened mine up, and we were about to toast it when I remembered my sponsor's voice. Hey! If you're going to drink, call me first. I want to watch what stupid looks like in action. So I said, Dad, can you wait a minute? I got to call somebody. I called Barney. I said, Barney, I'm going to have a beer with my dad. He said, okay, but can you just wait till I get there? I want to watch. That's what he was having Thanksgiving dinner with his family. And he showed up, acted like he owned my mother's house, walked right in, and I'm sitting there holding the beer, waiting to drink it. Do you hear me? You know, Barney didn't say a thing about the beer. He said, let's go for a ride. You know, he introduced himself to my mom and dad. And then we went for a ride. You know what? He never once said a thing about the beer. He told me how much he loved Dad. And for the next hour, all Barney talked about was himself incessantly. But he talked about how much he loved Dad. And then he dropped me back off at my mom's house. And I didn't drink. And a year and a half later, my father was dead from untreated alcoholism. Shortly thereafter, my mother died from untreated Al-Anonism. Make no mistake about it. I don't want to tell you nothing else about my family because they're alive. And I don't want to tell you stories about what I think they did to me to get your sympathy, support, and concern. Because I will embellish it to the 10th power. Lean it my way. And then when they come here hoping to have freedom, we will prejudge them because that's our nature. So I'm just going to tell you I come from an alcoholic home. I hope they get the same shot I've been given. But if you want to know what it was like growing up in my house, just watch Jerry Springer for about a week. I'm one of Jerry's kids. My sponsor tricked me. Now I know he lied to me, but old timers call it spiritual trickery. Now I commit spiritual trickery. He says you're going to build a foundation this first year. Devote yourself to AA. I know you have a lot of great plans for your life now that you're sober. But I want you to dedicate your first year to building the foundation in Alcoholics Anonymous, no matter what you're thinking. He said, you already got the hole dug. You may as well reinforce it. And he said, because on that foundation, the God that you don't believe in is going to place a mansion. And it has to be a mansion with many rooms because you're going to amass so many loved ones in Alcoholics Anonymous. And we don't want it to fall down when the first storm comes up because the storm is going to come up. A severe storm is going to rock your foundation. And if it wasn't built soundly and maintained through the years, the house will fall and you will drink. And by God, I bought it. For that first year, I did everything he asked me to do. Everything. Stood at the door greeting people I didn't want to talk to. Paid back the treasury I stole every now and then. Cleaned ashtrays I didn't dirty. Made terrible coffee. I figured if you didn't like it, you wouldn't drink it, but you guys are resilient. You will do anything to make a newcomer feel welcome, even drink the nastiest coffee you ever tasted in your life. There wasn't enough milk and sugar to purify it in the world. I did that for a year. And then at the end of the year, I don't know what you do here, but I'll tell you what we did in Moline. The sponsor comes up and gives you a token, says something nice about you. They make it up, but they don't care. And then they sit down. And then I'm supposed to come up and thank them, thank you, thank God, not necessarily in that order, thank AA as a whole, sit down and shut up, because that's about all I know. Something happened to me on the way to the podium. I realized on the way up I was a miracle. By the time I got here, I realized I was the miracle. And Barney was sitting about where you are. And as I looked at him, I noticed Bill and Bob's picture on the wall, and I saw mine floating up between them. Then I realized, humbly, as I was walking hand in hand with God, that I had spiritually outgrown my sponsor. I now had a year. He had 900. So I realized I needed to fire him and get a new sponsor that was worthy of my attention. So I got myself to sponsor me. And for the next 7 years, I did steps 1, 12, and 13. By the way, ladies, if you're in your first year tonight, and I come up to you after the meeting, and perhaps I'll posture, as some of us do, and I might say something like this: "Hey, would you like to go have coffee and talk about God?" If I do that, run! So after having a program of action like that, for 7 years, I weigh 146 pounds. I've once again lost my teeth. I'm more depressed now than I've ever been in my life. I can't call Barney because I've been lying on him. I can't call you because it's you whom I've been lying to about him. I'm at that sober jumping off spot that many of us find ourselves innocently. And I was convinced of one thing: AA doesn't work. I've been here 7 years. Why am I not fixed? And I called, by the way, this is not an opinion, so I don't want you to leave here tonight and say Wayne Butler gave this opinion. It's not my opinion. This is my personal life experience. I called my psychiatrist. And I told him, I said, "Doc, AA don't work. I'm dying. I need help." And based on what I said, AA doesn't work. I need help. He brought me in and run some tests. He drew my blood. He diagnosed me as having a chemical imbalance. Prescribed lithium. Then he asked me, then he prescribed a drug called amitriptyline, which is a pain blocker. And then he asked me if I would be willing to participate in a new program to experiment with a new antidepressant drug that was guaranteed to work wonders for alcoholics. We now know it's Prozac. And I said, absolutely. And he wrote out the prescriptions. I'm going to get them. And all of a sudden, this voice came through my head. "Call me! Dummy!" So I called Barney. Said, "Barney, I know I haven't talked to you for a while, but I think I better meet with you. Can I come out to the trailer?" He says, "No, I'll meet you at the Maid Ride." I found out later he wanted witnesses. So I walked into the Maid Ride, and he sat at the center table, of course, so everybody could watch. You know how the old timers are. And I sat my bag of pills down, of which I hadn't taken any. And I looked at my sponsor, as serious as I'm with you right now. And I said, "Barney, I'm bipolar." He says, "I know it. We all know it." I mean, he's got the whole damn restaurant involved now. He says, "We all know you're bipolar. One of these days you're going to be walking down 16th Street and you're going to hear the loudest explosion you've ever heard. It's going to be your head popping right out of your ass." He said, "I don't know about that bipolar stuff, but I do know this. You have never incorporated the principles and philosophies of Alcoholics Anonymous into your life as a way of life since you've been here. Therefore, you should be 10 times sicker than you ever were, because this is progressive, incurable, and fatal." And I was hoping that God he'd run out of breath. But you know what? He had me. He knew I had not done what was required for a person suffering from a spiritual illness such as I to recover. And then he says, I'll tell you what. He says, give us 2 years of your life. Now, when we started, he asked for one. They get greedy the sicker you get. He says, if you give us 2 years of your life and do everything we did and still do, the way it's outlined in the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous, that blue book, and use the 12 and 12 for amplification of the symptoms, I believe you can recover too. And you know what? I was so desperate. And I was so convinced that I was a liar and a cheat and a con sober that I was willing to listen to him. He didn't tell me not to take the medication. He said, try AA because you haven't. And you know what? In my heart of hearts, I knew I hadn't given it my best effort. And you know what? I had to know for sure. And so I didn't take the pill. I got into the big book, 7 years sober. Got into the big book, the 12 and 12. I don't want to go through all the details. It takes too long. But by my ninth year of sobriety, having taken the inventory right out of the big book, the way it's outlined, using the 12 and 12 for amplification, by my ninth year of sobriety, I weighed 242 pounds. My depression lifted, and to this very day, my depression has never come back. I was misdiagnosed. I appear to be bipolar, just like Dr. Silkworth says the manic depressive type. The word type. I have the type of symptoms that looks like it's bipolar, but it's called spiritual depression. And I had it. And the proof is that by applying the principles of AA over the course of action for the past 15 years, my depression is gone. That's proof to me. And then to put the butter on it, in my ninth year of sobriety, I had a dream that I knew could never come true. I wanted to be a cop. And you ever want a dream like that? I did. I knew I couldn't. But my sponsor said, you got to try. He says, because it might be self-will. It might be an obsession, and we don't know till you try and fail. If you fail, that's God's way of saying, it's you, pal. Come over this way and do what I want you to do. And based on that, I tried. I got my record expunged. And I applied for the sheriff's department. Now, I did not believe for 1 minute I could do it. I mean, I've been psychiatrically institutionalized 17 times. I've been arrested 9 times for domestic violence. 2 times for attempted murder. And I wanted to be a cop. Well, in Iowa, they consider that a good experience. I don't want to take the time to go through all that. I'm just absolutely amazed that I got that opportunity in my sobriety. I know it was God giving me an opportunity to live with myself. I know that's exactly what it was. Because I went ahead and applied, got in, and I went to the academy. I'll never forget that. I went to the academy with 16 men and women, graduated 4th in my class out of the police academy, missed Top Gun by 1 round. I called my sponsor up and I said, Barney, I made it. I'm graduating. And I heard my sponsor say, I'm proud of you. And he cried. And then I said, Barney, they gave me my gun. He said, oh, shit. Came to my graduation. The home group did. Can you imagine my home group at my police ceremony? Take that wing right over there. Here's the citizenry. Wayne's World. I mean, they could have arrested half of the people in the audience for outstanding warrants. I love it. I hope it shows. My son's with me. Let me tell you that story. I got 5 minutes left here. My son, who's 13 now, 2 years ago, I had the most difficult year of my sobriety. I love my son. And 2 years ago, I got papers in the mail from my son's mother and husband, whom I used to sponsor. And they were going to forcibly adopt my son They cited me for desertion and abandonment because I moved to California for no good reason. But what the lawyers do, good work. They did what they were supposed to do. They put in there what I used to be like, what I was like my first 7 years. And my lawyer told me I didn't have a chance. I didn't have enough money to fight it. And I talked to my sponsor about it, and my sponsor said, call your son. So I called my son, and he said he wanted to be adopted, and my heart shattered into a gazillion pieces. I'll never forget being on the fetal position on the floor, cradling the phone, trying not to let my son know he just destroyed me, in my opinion. And so I called my sponsor back, and I remember that day I took my friend out with me to Monterey Park to sign the adoption papers last spring. I remember when I went into the courtroom, I'll never forget it. I remember what the judge said to me. He says, Mr. Butler, you're aware that you're signing an irrevocable consent to adopt, and when you sign these papers, he'll no longer be your son. You'll have no right to readopt. It'll be over. And I said, I know. And I signed them. I left the room, went to the bathroom, and threw up for the first time in my sobriety and died. And had a lot of commitments. I didn't put it on anybody else. You taught me restraint of tongue and pen through the process of the steps. I didn't call her up and tell her what I thought. And what happened was I got a phone call. And by the way, let me clear that up. They didn't do nothing wrong. I'm not trying to disparage them. They were doing the right thing in their opinion. And a couple months later, I got this phone call. She had drank, and her husband had drank, and some things had happened, and they had to split up. And she called me, and she says, you got to come get your son. He needs you. He's not my son. You took him away from me. You broke my heart. You destroyed my life. And people in AA are judging me. There's nothing left. That's not what I said. That's what I thought. What I said was, can I call you back? And I called my sponsor. And I said, what do? He says, buy a plane ticket, stupid. So I bought the plane ticket, and I went back, and I spent 5 days with what I believe now was not my son. And I got to thank you. I never said an unkind word to him about his mom or stepdad. Never said anything to him. I just tried to nurture him as best I could, and I must have died 1,000 deaths during that 5 days. And then I got on the plane and flew back to California to die another death. I'm not trying to milk that. I'm just telling you that's what it was like. And if you've had a broken heart shattered like that, this ain't about being a victim. This is about losing something precious and having to accept it. And so I went on with my business. As God would have it, a month later, I got another phone call. You know what that phone call was? The paperwork from Monterey Park, California, has about 60 days to get sent to the Rock Island County Courthouse to be recorded into law. And if it doesn't make it to be recorded in time, it falls moot and has to be redone. And you know those records got lost in the mail. And that's the son that's with me right now. The adoption didn't go through. And his mother and I had a talk, and she declined to pursue adoption again. And I'm a better father for it today. I want you to know, you don't know how bad you want something until you almost lose it. And I got to tell you something, it made a better father out of me. And my son and I have a good relationship, and I don't have any resentment in my heart towards anybody involved. They were doing the right thing, and you taught me that. And now my heart's mended. But it wasn't just because that, it was because I was with you. I want to share this with you. Red light's on. I want to share this and I'll close. I don't want to abuse it too bad. I didn't know what to expect here. It's not about the gimmies. It's about the gibbies. My sponsor was a John F. Kennedy freak. I had no idea about that. He says, ask not what AA can do for you. Ask what you can do for AA. And you know, to the best of my ability, I've been doing that for 22 years. 9 months and 9 days. I have a sponsor. I sponsor alcoholics. I have a home group. I attend it regularly. I'm of service to that group. I'm of service to AA. And I have to do it day after day after day because I have but a daily reprieve. If the obsession ever strikes me to feel normal, because that's what alcohol produced in my mind, the feeling of normalcy, if I ever join you and don't feel like I fit in, I don't belong, I'm not a part of, I will have to pick up a drink because that's the strange illusionary effect produced by alcohol for me. But as long as I'm with you, I'm not with me. You hear me? Because when I'm not with you, I'm left with me. And I'm not alone. There should be a neighborhood watch sign right there. I'm done. If you're new, I want to welcome you into the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you need to be renewed, please feel free to jump back in. If you're new, I'll tell you how simple it is to start. It's hokey, but hang with me. Put one hand in the hand of your loving Father God, whatever you decide that is. Put your other hand in the hand of AA and your sponsor, and find some newcomer with less time than you to bring along. And you won't have any free hands with which to pick up a drink. Thank you for letting me share.